Hello, word nerds. Welcome to the dictionary. My name is Spencer, and that's it. That's my whole name. No, it's Spencer James Parks, if you want to know it for real. That's what I'm sort of going by. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Oh, yes, I did want to say, a little while ago, we had the word endogamy, which was about marrying within your group of people. And I believe what I said was essentially thinking along the lines of, this is something that you choose to do. You choose to marry within your group of people, which I believe is part of it. But I recently learned from watching the movie Origin, which I will probably talk about in the next episode at the end, that endogamy was more about a system-wide thing where the system, the group, is telling you who you can marry. There was a whole big part talking about endogamy in this film. Fascinating film, by the way. And so I just wanted to call out that, you know, obviously the dictionary only gives you so much information, and I didn't have all of it. I had never heard of this before, and so I wanted to point out to you, if maybe you've never heard it before, that maybe we're all learning stuff. I'm looking back at the definition. Marriage within a specific group as required by custom or law. So yes, it did actually get into that a little bit. It brings up a lot of things. Yeah. So I just wanted to call that out. It was a recent usage of this word in my life that I wasn't aware of, except for the fact that I had read it in this during this podcast, this show. It's funny how sometimes those words pop up. And this was a big one. Okay, let's talk about these words today. We have, the first word is escutcheon. 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 Noun from the 15th century. 1. A defined area on which armorial bearings are displayed and which usually consists of a shield. It's a defined area. Here's the area. On which armorial bearings are displayed. Did you hear my jaw crack? Armorial bearings, armor. I think of that when I hear the word armorial. So is it on an armor, or are these things that a military uses to show who they are, their icons, their whatever those words are? Usually consists of a shield. So is the bearing a shield, or is it on a shield? Defined area on which armorial bands are displayed and which usually consists of a shield. It seems like the shield is what's going on the thing in the escutcheon. But number 2 is a protective or ornamental plate or flange as around a keyhole. And there is a picture of this escutcheon. It shows a doorknob and a keyhole. And then there's this rectangular plate around the whole thing. It doesn't really matter the design. There's a couple of swirly, curly-cue swirly things at the top and then 2 on the bottom. Now, is this protective against the door? Like when people are trying to stick the key in and they keep on missing the keyhole, it's protecting the door when you have this metal plate. I don't really know what the point is, but I think most doors have this escutcheon. Never heard of this before. Number 3, the part of a ship's stern on which the name is displayed. That's just where the name goes. Just put it there. Now, this just seems like a plaque, kind of a rectangular, possibly metal plate. That just seems like what this is in all of these contexts. But what does the etymology say? Let's see. Middle English, Anglo-French, escutcheon, from Vulgar Latin, scution or scutio, from Latin, scutum, which means shield. and there's more at the word esquire. So yeah, it's a shield. It's a protective thing. It's just the thing. It's a shielding stuff. That's where it came from. How it became the part of the ship where the name is displayed, I'm not sure. Were they putting names on these escutcheons with the armorial bearings? No clue. Okay, what's the sound effect going to be? That was the last ESC word. We're getting into the ESDs. We're going to go through a lot of the ES section here. What was my sound? Whippity whippity boo. That's a fun sound. Next is ESD, abbreviation. It has a capital E. It's an abbreviation for Esdras, which is this in... Oh, it's the next word. Let's just go right to that. Whippity whippity boo. Esdras. That's how you pronounce it. Esdras. With a capital E. ESDRAS. Noun from the 14th century. Number one, either of two books of the Roman Catholic canon of the Old Testament. And then we have these sub-definitions. 1A is the number two definition for the word Ezra, E-Z-R-A. Esdras, Ezra. And then 1B is the number two definition for the word Nehemiah. I assume that's how it's pronounced. I'm not sure. But those would be the two books in the Roman Catholic Old Testament, I guess. Number two, either of two uncanonical books of Scripture included in the Protestant Apocrypha. And it says to see the Bible table, so I'm sure it talked about Esdras there. This is from the Hebrew Ezra, and that's it. I got nothing, no fancy, funny, smart things to say about Esdras. Okay. Whippity-bippity-boo. Next is ESE, all caps, abbreviation for East Southeast. We've talked about these a couple of times. We've seen a few of these in this E section. So East, well, for me, now this gets complicated. For me, East is that way. If I were looking at a compass, it's that way. But the actual East, in terms of my direction, would be, let's see, I think that's north. So I think East is actually that way. Yeah, East is that way. But for you, if you're looking at the video, then I think East would also be that way. Yeah, boy, I really got to cut my nails and cut my hair and shave my face. I got a lot of things to do. So East, Southeast. So just for the sake of argument, if East is this way and South is that way, this would be Southeast. But East, Southeast is a little bit closer to East. So it's more like this. It would be 22.5 degrees from east closer to south. Yeah. Okay. Whippity whippity boo. We have a suffix, an adjective suffix now. Ease, E-S-E, or it could be ease. But I think usually it's ease. This is the first form, and it means of, relating to, or originating in, and then where in where? A certain place or country. And that would be the first part of the word, because we have the example, Japanese. So if you are relating to, about, originating from Japan, then in English, you would say Japanese. A person from Japan is Japanese. Now, obviously, different languages all over the world have different forms of their words to say the same thing. But that's why this is an English podcast. We're talking about the English language. It's an English dictionary. I speak English sometimes okay, and that's it. The etymology, I mean, it's from different language forms. Portuguese, S, E-S. Italian, is, E's. I don't know how the Italians say that. Say, spelled the same. Latin, ensis. So all of these are the suffixes that basically mean the same thing, probably, relating to coming from a certain place. But we have a second form. Wibbidi wibbidi woo. The second form of is a noun suffix. The plural is just the same letters. Number one, native or resident of a specified place or country, as in Chinese. Now, what is the difference between these two? Now, the first one, the first form, is something that's related to originating from a place, not necessarily talking about a person. That rice could be Japanese rice, because it's an adjective suffix. You're describing it in that way. But this second form, noun, you're talking about a noun, a person, place, or a thing. So this one, it's the native or resident of a place. That's where you would use this suffix. But you're not going to use it for all countries. You know, we use different suffixes. Somebody from France is not a Francese. So where do you use it? They're French. It's interesting. I'm sure there's some sort of rule when you use this suffix opposed to other things, but I don't know. It's just going to depend on the word, I guess. 2A is a language of a particular place, country, or nationality, as in Cantonese. Now, that would be the language, one of the languages that is spoken, I believe, in China. It might be spoken in other places, too, but I'm pretty sure it's in China. But, you know, also there's a language in China called Mandarin, and that doesn't have the "-es suffix. So some of them get it, some of them don't. 2B, this is speech, literary style, or diction peculiar to a specified place, person, group, discipline, subject, or activity, lots of things, and this is usually in words applied in depreciation, as in journalese or baseballese. Am I reading that? Depreciation? Yeah, that's the word. Now, I think of depreciation as something else, like the value of something is going down. So let's reread this one. Speech, literary style, or diction peculiar to a thing, peculiar to that group, whatever it is. So, journalese, this is probably the jargon that journalists use when they're talking about their job, their work, whatever. Baseballese, you know those baseballers, they have their own sort of language. They're talking about errors and balls and fouls and stuff. This is all part of baseballese. Never heard of those two specifically, but I've definitely heard it used and used it myself to talk about. This is the sort of the language that this group uses. I'm trying to think of any other examples. I feel like there's one in particular that I can't come up with at the moment. But, you know, you can make up anything. If you have a specific group, like, okay, for instance, I'm in the Weird Al fandom group. And, you know, there's definitely some Weird Al-ies there, because there are words and phrases that get used a lot in his lyrics and, you know, things that are related to him that, you know, we Weird Al fans know, but not everybody else is aware. I'm not going to tell you. You have to learn it yourself. No additional etymology. So let's go to wibbidi-bibbidi-boo. SM plastic. It's ESEM and then the word plastic. I don't know if this is related to plastic at all. Let's find out. Adjective from 1817. Shaping or having the power to shape disparate things into a unified whole. Unified whole, all the stuff. As in, the SM plastic power of the poetic imagination. Whoa! That's a quote from W.H. Gardner. So poetic imagination has the power to shape disparate things into a unified whole. Using words, you can evoke a feeling, evoke something, emotion. You see, I don't do the poetry, so I can't even describe it so good. I'm not good with words. I think you've learned that probably by now. I don't have the SM plastic power of anything. But, you know, now it doesn't say if this is a strictly with words, strictly sort of metaphorical, an idea, or can it be physical too? Can a physical thing be SM plastic? Does it have the power to shape disparate things, things that are not like each other, into something that is whole and together? Maybe the whole thing is the poem. The poem is the whole thing. Or maybe just the line or a few lines, a stanza, is the whole thing. Putting all these words, make it, somehow you put them together in a smart way to create a metaphor or whatever. Okay, asymplastic. This is from the Greek eshen, that's two words, which means into one, plus the English word plastic. Things that are plastic are like, you know, we're not literally talking about plastic, the stuff that is ruining our planet, one of the things that's ruining our planet, but it's more like plasticity. It has the ability to be reshaped or formed. So you are reforming stuff into one thing. That's what that first part means. Okay, interesting. Wibbly-bobbly-boo! Next is Esserine. Esserine. E-S-E-R. Esserine. I think I added an N in there. Esserine. E-S-E-R-I-N-E. Noun from 1879. The synonym is physostigmine. Physostigmine. P-H-Y-S-O-S-T-I-G-M-I-N-E. Physostigmine. I don't know. I have no clue what that is. I got no guesses on what physostigmine is. But it's also called esserine. Now, we could type in that whole funny pH word, or we could just type in esserine. It's highly toxic parasympathetic sympathomimetic alkaloid, specifically a reversible cholinesterase inhibitor. Oh, obviously that occurs naturally in the calabar bean of the fruit of the manchineal tree. I don't know what a reversible cholinesterase inhibitor is, but it's this. Wibbity-wobbity-boo! 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 Okay, the next word is E-S-K with a capital E. It's an abbreviation for Eskimo, which is coming up. Wibbity-wobbity-woo-woo! Esker is next. E-S-K-E-R. Noun from 1848. This is a long, narrow ridge or mound of sand, gravel, and boulders deposited by a stream flowing on within or beneath a stagnant glacier. So you got a glacier. It's stagnant. Now, is this saying that it's only below a glacier that's not moving? They don't look like they're moving. They look like they're not moving, but they are moving. I wonder if there are glaciers that are just stopped completely. But either way, under the glacier is this stream. There's a stream flowing on it, inside of it, the glacier, on the glacier, in the glacier, or below the glacier. And there is rocks and gravel and things in this stream, and then they get deposited at some point. For whatever reason, based on the shape of everything, the stream is depositing these sand, gravel, or boulders, and it creates either a mound or a long, narrow ridge. It's just probably like the opposite of a ditch. All the way down it goes. And it's called an esker. It's called an esker because this is from the Irish word. I don't know how they say it. Maybe it's also pronounced esker. It's spelled E-I-S-C-I-R. And it just means ridge. So it's a ridge. So Now, I wonder why it's from Irish. At some point, there were probably glaciers in Ireland. I don't think that there are now. Maybe by the time this episode airs, there will be. But 1848, not all that long ago, I don't think there would have been glaciers in Ireland in 1848. But for whatever reason, it's got an Irish name. It was named after an Irish word, and then it transformed into English. Wibbly wibbly boo! Next is Eskimo, with a capital E. Noun from 1584. Let's see. Number one, the plural would be either Eskimo or Eskimos, with an S. And this is a member of a group of people of Northern Canada, Greenland, Alaska, and Eastern Siberia. So the people who are living in those areas, and, you know, I believe that they are indigenous. You know, I guess at some point people could have traveled there and stayed there, but I'm pretty sure that these people are indigenous. They have been there for countless years. They go generations and generations back for probably thousands of years. For whatever reason, they decided all those years ago to travel to where it's very cold and live a life in the very cold area. Yeah, because it's all pretty north up there. Number two, any of the languages of the Eskimo peoples, you just call their languages Eskimo, but of course they're going to have probably more specific names for where they are in all these different parts of the world. Eskimoan, I have never heard of that. Eskimoan, it's an adjective. You're just describing something as like an Eskimo or related to an Eskimo. It's Eskimoan. This word is, there's quite a bit of etymology, which makes sense when you think about it. This is from the obsolete Esquimawe, which is probably from the Spanish Esquimau, which is from the Montagnais language, which is an Algonquin language of Eastern Canada. Looks a little French, because we know that there's some French in Canada. Their word is, I don't know how to pronounce that. There's an eight at the end, and that's probably just some symbol of how to pronounce it. A-I-A-C-H-K-I-M-E, and then the number eight. And if you know how to pronounce that, please send me a voicemail. Also from the Mi'kmaq, which I guess is maybe another Eskimo language, probably akin to the modern Montagnais word Asimu, which means, oh, this is fascinating. It means she laces a snowshoe. Whoa. Also from the Ojibwa word Eskimé. So, comes from all over the places. It's been evolving and changing for all these years, going from this group to this group to this group. And so, you know, now, at least in English, we just say Eskimo. But, you know, you go to these different places and they're probably going to have a different word to describe the people and the language that live there. I did love, she laces a snowshoe. Is that where this is coming from? They're like, well, we all have to lace up our snowshoes. And so we're just going to name our group of people for the people who lace up snowshoes. Is this a word that we're still using? I don't really know. Maybe I'll do a little digging to see if, like, is this still considered a politically correct word to use? I think probably in some cases it is, possibly depending on the person, maybe it's not. I don't know. For whatever reason, I feel like maybe it's not, maybe there's a better word. Let's put it that way. Maybe it's not that Eskimo is bad necessarily, but maybe there's a more accurate word. Like, maybe the specific groups in Canada, Greenland, Alaska, Siberia, maybe other places, maybe those specific groups have a name for their tribe or their whatever. I'm not sure. I can't really think of one. I feel like in my brain there might be one, but I'm not sure. I do have to shout out, and this maybe also has not aged very well, but there's a very silly song. I think it was originally on the TV show Mad TV. Is that what it was called? It was like the Mad Magazine sketch show. And I heard it on a Dr. Demento collection, and I don't know the exact title, but it's basically, I'm the only gay Eskimo in my tribe. And it's just a very funny play on words. And again, not entirely sure how it's viewed these days. This was quite a few years ago when I heard this, but it is very funny. And I'm not going to sing it to you. Okay, the next word. It is Eskimo Aleut. Now, this is two words with a hyphen. The second word is capital A-L-E-U-T, noun from 1921. This is a language family including Eskimo and the Aleut languages. So they're probably related to each other. They're probably similar in some ways. Is Aleut another word for Eskimo? What I want to do, though, I want to, just because for my own mental sake, I'm going to just do a quick little search for just another word for Eskimo, because it's kind of bugging me. Native, indigenous, Alaska Natives increasingly prefer to be known by the names they use in their own languages. Yeah, makes sense. Such as, now I don't know how to pronounce this, Inupiaq or Yupik, and Inuit. Now, I've definitely seen this word, and yes, this is probably the word that I was thinking of but couldn't come up with. Inuit is now the current term in Alaska and across the Arctic, and Eskimo is fading from use. So yes, Inuit would be a more accurate word because it sounds like it comes from their own language, opposed to this that came from a variety of places. Okay, glad we checked that. Next is Eskimo Curlew. I think that's probably about how you say it. Curlew. This is two words. Noun from 1813. An extremely rare New World curlew that breeds in northern North America and winters in South America. Wow, that is a huge range. Northern North America, that's Canada and Alaska. Let's bring the hand down so you can see it if you're watching the video. That's way up here. The scale is way off. And then they go all the way to South America. They go through Canada, maybe through Alaska, through all of the United States, into Mexico, and then possibly into, you know, all those other countries in Central America, and all the way down to South America. That whole continent, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, where are they? And also, what is a curlew? I feel like I've never heard. It's a bird. Okay, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. They're not a whole lot of animals that can go that distance other than birds. Because they can fly. Oh, they have a very long, skinny bill. Yeah, I gotta post a picture on the social media of this Eskimo curlew. Are we changing the name of the Eskimo curlew to Inuit curlew or just something else curlew? It's rare, and the species name is Numenius borealis. And I think borealis, something about the north, probably. I know I've learned this before, and I always forget. Okay, yeah, they breed, they make babies in northern North America, and they spend their winters in the south where it's warm. It's not winter for them. Next is Eskimo dog, two words, noun from 1774. And yeah, I think we got to put a picture of an Eskimo dog on social media. Go to @dictionarypod on Instagram and Threads and Twitter, I guess. Any of an American breed of Spitz dogs with a thick white coat. Also, any of a breed of Canadian sled dogs. Canadian, Alaskan, what are they? They're Eskimo dogs. Yeah, I think we've all seen these. They're pulling the sleds. I don't love the idea of all these dogs doing all this hard work to pull a sled. At the same time, when they are hanging out in the very cold winters with all the snow, they seem very happy. They seem to love the temperature because they have these thick white coats, and that keeps them real warm. So warm. I wish I had a thick white coat. Then they like to hang out in the snow. They sleep in there. And they're like, yeah, this is the best temperature for me. I love this so much. Not like my cats. They like to hang out on the radiators. And I'm like, how can you stand the heat? But, you know, they're just built differently. Wibbawap, 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 wibbawap. Next is ESL, all caps, abbreviation for English as a Second Language. Probably aware of this. A lot of places in America, the classes, there are ESL classes. These are classes for people who grew up in America but had parents who came from another country, and so that was their first language, whatever language their parents were speaking when they came over to America. Of course, I'm just using America as an example because we speak English here. So whatever language it is, that was their first language, and then they have English as a second language. And so, you know, there could be ESL classes where either they're partially learning English or also just learning the topic, but with a teacher maybe who is bilingual and can sort of go back and forth between two languages, or is explaining things in a very basic way using basic English words so that they can still understand as they are learning English. ESL. We need more of this. I have a feeling that we don't have as many ESL classes and things around the world, around the country at least, than we probably should. Because, now, that's not to say that we are trying to make English be the main language for everybody, but there are a lot of people who don't know English so good. So, you know, we have a lot of immigrants coming in, and we need to cater to all types in America, because that's what it is. America is built on immigrants, like literally. Next is ESOP. You could also pronounce it ESOP, and it tells me both pronunciations. It tells me ESOP, and it also tells me how to pronounce those letters, ESOP. And which ones are emphasized? The P is emphasized. ESOP. It's spelled ESOP, all caps. This is a noun from 1975. This is a program by which a corporation's employees acquire its stock. Does that mean that they can buy the stock? They are allowed to buy the stock? Are they given the stock? Either way, it's probably a good thing. Yes, employees, you should have some benefit in this company. You know, you're getting your pay, but if the company's doing well, you are the reason it's doing well, so you should be compensated in some way for that. I don't really know the stock, so I can't really speak much more than that. But I can tell you that this stands for Employee Stock Ownership Plan, ESOP. We have one more word for this episode. Weedly woodle boop. It is esophagitis, or you can say it esophagitis. Either pronunciation for that G is fine. So don't go yelling at people if they say esophagitis, but you like esophagitis. You're both right. So deal with it. It is spelled ESOPHAGITIS. ITIS, noun from circa 1900. The plural would be esophagitides or esophagitides. This is inflammation of the esophagus. You know, just that whole, I believe it's just the whole tube that goes from your throat to your stomach. It's about right there. Well, you can't see it. That's your esophagus, right? Why do I second guess myself on all these things that I know? That's what it is. It's the esophagus. We're going to talk about the esophagus in the next episode. It'll be the first word. And it looks like it's just one long definition, which I guess makes sense. Why can't other things have an esophagus? But if it's inflamed, you got the esophagitis. Esophagitis? I think I like esophagitis. Yeah, that's it. Let's read the words again, and then we can pick a word of the episode. We had escutcheon, E-S-D or ESD, esdris, E-S-E, ease, S-M plastic, eserine, esk, esker, Eskimo, Eskimo Aleut, Eskimo Curlew, Eskimo Dog, ESL, Aesop, and Esophagitis. Let's see. Okay, well, I liked a few of these. I thought escutcheon was pretty interesting, especially the one that's the plate around the door handle and the keyhole. Didn't know that that had a name. Of course it has a name. Everything has a name. What are you talking about? SM plastic, I thought was a pretty interesting concept of something has the power to shape or is shaping things that are not alike and putting them all together into a thing. Let's pick that. Let's pick SM plastic as the word of the episode. Because when I'm making this podcast, I'm being SM plastic. I'm taking all these words and I'm putting them into a whole thing. Wish it would have rhymed better, but that's okay. SM plastic. That's it. That's the word of the episode. Yay. We learned all these fun words. And now I'm going to tell you about another movie that I watched. Now, I already mentioned Origin, but that's going to be saved for the next one. Because right before Origin, I watched, finally, Howl's Moving Castle. I think it was 2004, I think it said. Never saw it. Somebody recommended it to me because we're working on an animation thing and they watched it and they were inspired by the style in some way. I need to get some more information, but they said, yes, this is sort of something about this is what I like to create this animation. So I said, yes, I've been wanting to see this for years. It looks very interesting. That style of animation, Studio Ghibli and all those other similar movies, are not ones that I'm really familiar with. I haven't watched only just one, I think. And so I thought, yes, I should watch this. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. Really interesting, sort of weird, fantastical stuff going on. Definitely recommend it. It's a fun, fun watch. Very visual. Really cool stuff in there. Okay, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening and possibly watching on YouTube. It's just right there. Go to my YouTube channel, @SpeedJampart, and just watch all my videos. Just hit play and let them go all day, every day. This has been Spencer Dispensing Information. Goodbye.